Good morning. Oh, Chairman always said good morning back.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Goldman.
Every morning I was hoping this is going to be a good morning, but I'm afraid that my hopes are a little bit more than what. You ever get up to see something or to talk about something and you don't know what you're talking about? Well, that's what's happening today. And the longer I talk, the worse it got. I was hoping, but I did learn two or three things, that, and that's all I want you to learn, just two or three things. Or become acquainted with it, I might say. It's funny that we came in and we were talking about memorization. And when I get up to have one of these little talks with grown people, which I'm not allergic to grown people, y'all know I love you, but you're not Quethers. You may be inside, and I can't see it. That's how I always taught my children when I was 4 years old. But anyway, I kind of got interested in this. And if you think that looks complicated, I spent a long time looking at that. I didn't even know if this is what I ought to be talking about. But, you know, I just thought, learn one thing. I'll take what I learned as I went along. First thing I was going to do, I wanted to use the 23rd Psalm, because for whatever reason it is, I learned that before I started school. I know what reason I did. But I've always liked it, and it's always been a comfort to me. A lot of people on their way to being, when you see the movies and the executions, they are reciting that. So I think that it's been an item of comfort, no matter what your situation is. And I would hate to bring that up, but I'm hoping the young ones didn't understand the word. But anyway, that I want to include that, and it's one of the three things that I can remember memorizing before I started school. And I started school when I was 5 years old. I don't know whether I was driving my mother crazy. I do know why I started school. But anyway, I like to do that for some reason. And there was a situation, you remember I told you one day that when we went to school, there was religion was part of our school day. And I remember being in a play, and that wasn't a play, it was a poem, and reciting the 23rd Psalm. But I was holding the Bible like I was reading it. You know, like that, because that sounded good to me. I couldn't read it, and some kids can read before they're 5. I know somebody was acting like they could last night. But I like the 23rd Psalm, and I also another one that I'll come up to a little bit. But what the main reason for this is Matthew 24:35, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words will not pass away. And so today we're going to look at the 16:11 little parts of that, the original Bible. And Stan was nice enough to copy this for Jerry yesterday, and I got this one upside down, but so I'm not going to blame that on anyone. I certainly appreciate it. I don't want it to come out if Jerry had copied it for me, but anyway, I don't know how to copy and paste, so I copy, cut, paste physically. Anyway, this is about a Bible that was rewritten by King James in 1611. It's the 400th anniversary of it in 2011. And it kind of showed me that things were a lot different then, and we don't really know how fortunate we are to have things to where it was a more simple life. But I'll have to pass this out, and you can kind of see what I'm talking about. The first thing that's on it... Start those going back. The first thing that's on it is the contents, one of the content pages. I found two different ones, but both of them were just as interesting. And I put over here on the little side the original one. I think that they typed it so you can read it a little bit better. And if you notice on there, I put the whole page. It's kind of hard to look at, but the more you look at it, the more you're seeing it. And all of these are, of course, yes. One more right back here. Okay. Thank you. Did y'all get some? Okay. The more I looked after looking at that picture, I could see little bitty pictures all over it. And, of course, these are representations, and I hope there's not anything evil on there. Oh, I brought my magnifying glass in my purse, but I guess I'm not gonna really need that. I did last night. But it has a lot of really interesting things. Does anyone have you looked at the men going down the right hand side? Mm-hmm. And does anyone have an idea what they might represent, what that picture might represent? Apostles, okay. They have different, a little bit of different names. I'm not a phonetic reader. I'm a memorization reader. And I sure can't read them on this without a magnifying glass. Over on the left-hand side, there's some little kind of mini-looking pictures in that. Do you have any idea what that might be?
The tribes.
And one or two, they will have some different spellings. And I think the spelling of it is, I see someone up there with wings on. I see one man reading, another man riding at the top. I see a lamb, I see a lion. I see all kinds of things in this particular picture. This Bible was known for what they said, the beauty, the poetic assembly of it, and another word, I forgot what it was. It doesn't matter because you only have to learn one thing today. I'll tell you what I'm going to learn. But if you'll turn the page, you'll see that some of those are blown up. And over on the right-hand lower corner, you'll see that the name and the order of all the books of the Old and New Testament with their numbers and their chapters. If you have very good eyes, you can see that some of the words are a little different. But yet, phonetically, they sound a lot alike, I'm told. Some of you just recognize them for what they are. You can see the different tribes and the different symbols. I don't know if they just made it up. They probably did. But it's pretty. It's pretty. Doesn't mean it's exactly what truthful or correct, but it's pretty. Then if you go on over to the third page, well, first of all, though, I want you to turn to the back page and stand on your head, turn it sideways, and you'll see what the Psalms, 23rd Psalm, looked like in that particular original, in that Bible. And you can read it. It starts out with, I was going to memorize that too, but I didn't, something of David. But this is the 23rd Psalm. It's very short. It has like six verses. And it's interesting to me that you can read part of the words, they look just exactly like we use today, and then part of them don't. But if you'll turn, not get back off the top of your head and look at the bottom of the page, I put in there what the 23rd Psalm looked like. If you could use our letters that we have today. It was a comparison. It's a Psalm of David. And as I said, this should be something of comfort to us. A lot of times, it might not have the meaning that we use, but we do know that God will always be with us. The Lord's my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. Look at green. He leadeth me, look at me, beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. Look at soul. You see something different about those words? They have ease behind them, most of them, don't they? He leadeth me in the paths, there's mother, E, of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk, another E, through the valley of the shadow, another E, of death I will fear, another E, no evil, for thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, another E, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. Another E. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy. And it's scattered throughout. Follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now then, let's turn back to, which is a good teaching. But let's turn back and I'm just going to read a little bit of this and kind of go down. The 1611 King James Bible was written more than 400 years ago when the English language was different. The original 1611 AD text written in early modern English shows the language in closer association with the Latin roots. spelling was the Jacoby style, which was not entirely standardized but could be read phonetically. The original typeface was in Gothic style, although both the type style and the older language may be considered difficult to read by some 21st century English readers. The King James Version is recognized, respected by its beauty, its cadence, and its poetic feel. Okay, on number one where it says they're different, this is a sampling of John 3:16. That was something else. Another one that I remember memorizing very young. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. And I don't know very many children that don't know that verse. Well, I don't know very many children anymore. But most of them would recognize that as a promise to us. And I think that that's one that if we don't know, we should commit that to memory, because you can say those things in your head, you know, like you sing a song, sort of, and it will be a comfort to you when you really, really need, or at least they are to me. Going down to number two, for instance, an 1833 copy of a 1617 version with Roman letters. And once again, you see some unfamiliar spelling to us. Hello, come in. On the third, a 1900 to 1970 pure Cambridge edition based on the 1769 version. So there's been a lot of different versions. And it tends to mix people up like it did me, I guess. But at the bottom, it kind of explains a little bit the different spellings. English spelling differences in John 3:16. This is just in John 3:16. And this, the U, is equal to a V. Example, love equal love. And they spell it L-O-U-E-D. Gave, G-A-U-V-E, is equal to gave as we spell it. But if I looked at G-A-U-V-E, being a phonetic speller, reader, I would go, I don't know what that word is. That's exactly what I would say in my head. And then I'd go back and I'd go, V is what I would probably say. I don't know, what would you say? And I would say, what is that word? So I think I admire Stan so much from going back and knowing how to, you know, come from one spelling of it and another version of it. And going on, the Y with the E above it, it was used to represent the thorn character. I'm going to have to really work on trying to find out what that is, the thorn character, which means the, whatever that is, to learn, and where it has, of course, to learn more, you can't do that. I'm going to have to dismiss that. I don't know what I'm talking about here. Double N for sun, S-O-N-N-E. I would have said Sonay, probably. That wouldn't have made any sense to me. So I'm so grateful for what we have. V is equal to a U. The double V is equal to W. This is what I learned. It stayed with me. Example, sword. Doesn't that look funny? S-V-B-O-R-D is equal to sword. The V was called a U. This is why we still call a W. Now see, I've learned, men's gotten as old as I am, and I didn't know why I said W. But now I know, not that that's our sharing, but I think that it's something that's, you could pick something to learn. An I is J, a long S letter looks like an F letter, and so forth. But what all of this meant to me, I guess, is that the word isn't going to change. Nothing's going to change it. There may be something that isn't right in some versions. There may be something that they got they didn't pick up when I was looking at the two different, comparing them. I thought, what a tremendous job it took. I read that there were 54 men that started out as translators and wound up to be 47. And they weren't, different things happened to them. Some of them died. Some of them turned out not to be as good as they thought they were. Some of them didn't take directions. But when it was all said and done, they were able to translate it 400 years ago. And I think I'm I think that we can be assured that him and her shall pass away, but my words will not pass away. We survived that long. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Start with that I don't feel qualified to teach geography. And I'm counting on you, Miss Betty, to help me out. I've heard your comment. You're good. Okay. Miss Jean is sick this morning, so we don't have our projector information, and I apologize about that. But I know we all have our maps in our books, so we can kind of refer back and forth if we need to. And basically, we're just going to go through the questions. I have pulled a few scriptures that go along with some different parts. Just because, for me, the connection is what makes the geography interesting. Otherwise, it's just like being in school looking at maps and I didn't like it in school. You either like geography or you don't, I think. And since I didn't, I need to make connections. And when I'm like, oh, that's where, like, I think it's so cool to see Nebo on the map and know that that's where, you know, Moses got to see the promised land. And to see where the promised land is in conjunction with that, that's kind of fun. So I pulled in a few scriptures, but not as many as I had hoped to. So if any of you already have some floating around in your head and your memory or whatever, or you've jotted them down yourselves as you were studying, please share them, because that's what makes geography rich. So anyway, we're just going to go through the questions, because that's all I have material for, is what came out of this book. And when we're finished with that, if we have any extra time, share something that you've learned so far, because I think, again, that will make this kind of rich. We're all going to pull something different that kind of stood out to us. So anyway, let's start with identifying the mountains. And does anybody have a good map? Because mine looks like a fifth grader did it. Does anybody have a good map that they don't mind kind of saying, well, we have this one, I guess we can, but so just as we're doing these, maybe have your map open so that you can kind of pinpoint what we're talking about as we're going along. Okay, so identify the mountains. Which mountain was snow covered year round? And which mountain was famed for its cedars? Okay, let's look at 2 Chronicles 2:16. Because that's one of the areas where that was mentioned for us. And who would like to read that? Who's got it? Thank you.
And they will cut wood from Lebanon as much as you need. We will bring it to you in rafts, a sea to Joppa, and you will carry it up to Jerusalem.
Cool. Now, do you remember reading about that in here, why they had to do it that way? What was
a huge gorge.
Right. And that was something I never knew until I was doing this. So, you know, that's kind of fascinating when you start realizing what the geography of the land looked like. This huge gorge is in the way. That's why they had to bring it around through the sea. All right. And which mountain juts out into the Mediterranean? And that one's really easy to see because it's pretty straight, except for that little spot right there. So that was an easy question. Okay, which one lies immediately east of the city of Jerusalem? Excuse me.
Olives.
Olives, yes. And which are the twin mountains on either side of Shechem?
Ephraim and Manasseh.
Yep. And what is the range of mountains west of the Jordan? I have trouble with these two. These next two. I did too. Yeah. And for the next one, the range of mountains east of the Jordan?
Anti-Lebanon
or the Hill of Galilee. Okay. And then the Jordan begins at this base.
Hermon
again. Yep. And Moses died here? Nebo. All right. We're covering this really fast, y'all. Okay. I have a few scriptures. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to remind everyone that, and we might have talked about it during the time that I was absent and stuff, that Mount Carmel was very famous because that's where Elijah brought the prophets in or invited the prophets of Baal to humiliate them, but to tell the God's people that you need to choose, you know, which God is the true God.
And the fascinating thing about that was, did God tell him he was going to honor his request in this? I mean, he had a lot of faith that God was just as annoyed with them as he was and was going to demonstrate this, you know. That's a very fascinating story to
me. And then while he was up on that mountain, that's when he prayed for the rain to come again. And I can just picture him looking out over the Mediterranean and seeing this, you know, just this fist-sized cloud, and here it comes, and telling the king, you better go down and you better hurry because it's fixing to come and go.
Yeah.
You could really see that too. Mm-hmm. When you're up there.
Wow.
They have
Do you have any pictures with you on that?
Not today. But they have a huge statue in life.
Oh, really? Wow. That's always been one of my favorite stories because they had what was coming to them on that. And it's not that I really rejoice in someone getting what's coming to them as much as I do rejoice in knowing that God is just. And sometimes the answer you expect him to give is so... An example of this, what I'm trying to say, is Daniel and the lion's den. Those men that tried so hard to get him crushed and get him demoralized end up punished and humiliated the exact way they intended for him to be. So they got the justice, and so did Daniel, really. So that's just a neat story. In fact, I remember reading it to my children, and it was for the first time straight out of the Bible where the details of, you know, they got attacked by the lions before they even hit the ground, and my boys were like, cool! So, you know, those stories are just amazing. Anyway, let's get back to this. Genesis 13:10 is another scripture that I've pulled out of here. Is about the Jordan, these next few. The Jordan's mentioned a lot in the Bible, so we could have pulled hundreds, but I just pulled a few. 15:10, anybody got it?
So I did 15:10?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I did say 13:10. That's the correct one.
Which one? 13:10. 13:10, okay. And Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. Before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you go toward the Lord.
Okay. So it was mentioned, I think it was last week, that, you know, there were parts of it that's just dry and barren now. And I found that verse kind of interesting because it kind of explains why it's dry and barren now, where it was well watered before. It's because the Lord had destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, so probably a lot of that land got destroyed by the fire. So.
Did you skip the names of the...
I haven't gotten to that section yet. I'm still doing the area of the Jordan, kind of from the top where we're talking about the range of mountains.
Okay.
We're in the Jordan.
I lost it, sorry.
Those kind of questions 6-8 are about the Jordan, so I had pulled a few scriptures and I almost passed them by and then I said, oops. Okay, we have Numbers 13:29. Courtney, do you want to grab that one?
Mm-hmm.
The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the hill country. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the Jordan.
Okay. And I pulled that one just because as we're doing this lesson, we were talking a lot about the hill country. We were talking about, you know, where the different peoples lived. And so I kind of thought that was a neat verse to kind of pull this together. And okay, Numbers 22, verse 1. And I chose this one for the same reason, just kind of went along with some of what we were studying here. Anybody got that one? Mississippi, you got it?
No, but you know? I didn't get what you said.
Oh, okay. Numbers 22, verse 1.
And the children of Israel moved and camped in the plains of Moab on the side of the Jordan across from Jericho.
All right. And we talked about last week who, where the Moabites had settled. So again, that's why I thought that one was kind of neat. And then chapter 26 of Numbers, verse 3.
So Moses and Eleazar the priest spoke with him in the plains of Moab by the Jordan, across from Jericho.
Okay. And again, we were talking about the plains of Moab. We kind of, you know, Jericho is a big feature in the Bible stories and stuff. So I just wanted to pull a few passages that kind of bring us to a story that we remember. And of course, you have to kind of have quickly glanced at each chapter to know what we're talking about, like what the different stories are. But it's just kind of fun to make it all work together and see that it's not just a map and it's not just words. It all works together and think with each other, and the Old and New Testament has different pieces of these different lands, but they're all discussed. So, okay, let's moving on to the names for the people and the land. We're mostly in the first few talking about the land itself. So, this name comes to us from the Romans.
Palestine.
Mm-hmm. And this land was so called because God promised it to Abraham. Promised land. That one was pretty easy. The land so called because Abraham's descendants did inherit the land.
Land of Israel.
You got it?
Land of Israel.
Okay. I thought she was going to answer. Did she know it?
No. She probably did.
Very good. Okay, and this name, now we're getting into the people themselves. This name means stranger or foreigner.
Hebrew.
And I was trying to think of a way I could have fun with that one because I really like that stupid joke that the men have to make the coffee because Hebrews. So I was trying to figure out a way of mixing what it means in with that joke, but I haven't figured it out yet. So if any of you have any ideas, that would be fun. People from the southern kingdom of Judah were first called by this name. Jew. The descendants of Jacob. No longer shall your name be called Jacob, which I should have pulled the passage for that, but I didn't. Does anybody know that one?
We just read it in Genesis 31. I think 31 or 32, we just read it this morning.
Yes, it's the end of 32, verses 27 to 28, if somebody wants to read that. Thank you. Somebody have it? Thank you.
So he said to him, "What is your name?" He said, "Jacob." And he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed."
Right. And so that's why the people were called Israelites. And it came from Jacob. Okay, and then the land is so called because a particular branch of Ham's descendants settled there. Canaan. Good. And the name we call these people today?
Jews.
Jews. Good. We're moving on to identifying the bodies of water. So the first one is the main river of the land that we spent a lot of time talking about last week.
Jordan.
Jordan. And which one empties into the Dead Sea from the east? Arnon. And which one flows into the Dead Sea from the south? I'm sorry?
Zeres.
I have Deuteronomy chapter 2:13 on that one. Chapter 2, verse 13. And who's got that one? Thank you.
The name of the second river is Beyond. It is the one which goes around the whole land of
Do we have Deuteronomy 2:13?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was Genesis.
Okay. Chris, you have it?
Yeah.
I'm going to read it loud.
Now rise up and get the
signal of the river. Well, they don't make it 13. It just describes the river itself.
Right.
Deuteronomy 2:13. It says, now rise up and get over the brook Zareph. The one over the brook Zareph. It's just 2:13.
Yeah. But you could read 14 too, because it actually does describe it a little bit more.
Do you want me to read it?
Sure.
Yeah. And the days in which we came
from. I'm going to read it loud so they can hear you behind.
And the days in which we came from Kadesh Barnea until we were came over the brook Zareph were 38 years until the generation of the men who were overconsumed from the midst of the camp. As Jehovah's name.
Okay. So it took them some time, 38 years from the time to come from Kadesh Barnea until they crossed that river. So they were camped on the one side for a long time. That was right after the wilderness wanderings. So that just kind of puts that particular river into perspective. This is where they crossed. So, okay, the next one drains the western portion of the Valley of Jezreel. Okay. And I have Joshua 19:18 as a reference for that one. I don't see that being correct. Let me see.
It's verse 20.
Okay.
That one mentions the valley of Jezreel. So that's how it is.
Okay, the next one is the world's lowest freshwater lake.
In Galilee.
Say Galilee.
Galilee, yes. Okay, and then the Great Sea, the one that's called the Great Sea in the Bible.
Mediterranean.
And we can easily see why. Which lake has been drained? And which one was the lowest plant? Lowest point of land found on Earth. Say that again.
Dead Sea.
Yes. And I thought this map was really interesting because, again, this is stuff that until you study it, you don't ever really know it. But just to look at where the beginning of the Dead Sea is, how much lower than the land it is already, and then of course it sinks even deeper. So that was really fascinating to me, just to see how deep that was.
And I think that's why, you know, how storms would come quickly, because the wind, when they blew, they would blow down and around the mountain.
Like a wind tunnel.
Yes.
Yeah. See, I didn't like geography, but I'm starting to get intrigued by all of this. Okay, let's see. The next one is the one that means the middle of the earth. Mediterranean. The Wadi that, and this one I struggled with, so I don't know if I have my answer correct. So if somebody else has a different answer, I'm probably going to say you're right. But the Wadi that formed Israel's southern boundary on the coastline. It was the River of Egypt.
Okay.
It's
a Wadi.
Dry
waterbed. It's a what?
Dry waterbed.
Okay, that's why I was struggling because I thought it was a connection of rivers in one place.
On page 13 of your book, it says label the Wadi called the River of Egypt and note as the southern boundary of Canaan along the coastline.
So that's how you tell the answer. I was looking and reading and reading, and I'm saying, I can't find it. Okay, so it's the River of Egypt. Okay, the Bible name for the Dead Sea we've already mentioned, but it's Salty. And I have a reference for that, which is Genesis 14, verse 3. And again, these are not single references. There are others, but I just was pulling a few quickly, so tried to find a few that would actually be something we can relate to. And this is back when the different kings came forth to make war. And somebody go
ahead. I'm
sorry, Genesis 14, verse 3. Miss Cliffy, do you have that?
Yes.
Would you read it, please?
All these joined together in the valley of Sodom, that is
Okay, so that's where the kings made war, was in the Valley of the Salt Sea. Again, a Bible story we read over and over again, but it's just kind of nice to have a pinpoint of where it took place. Okay, the river between Mount Lebanon and the hills of Galilee.
Leontes.
I have different answers. Does everybody have a Leontes? Okay. That's the bad part about it. Teaching when you're not confident in something. I can learn from you. Okay, well, that's the good part. The bad part is that I can't teach you if I don't know it myself, right? Okay, the people who control the land between the Arnon and the Zered rivers. Okay, and who controlled the southern coastal plain? Okay. And who turned to sea trade very early because their coastal plain was very, very narrow? Yep. Who lived on the edge of the desert?
Ammonites.
Who had Mount Seir as their stronghold?
Okay.
And who claimed Bashan very early in Israel's history? Now, see, all of these are just dead facts to me. I wish I had time to pull scriptures for these. Does anybody have any references, anything they can add to this section before we move on?
The only thing that I could come up with from my third and fourth graders was, who are those Moabites?
Who are the Moabites?
Aaron.
Lot.
Aaron.
Oh, Lot.
Lot.
Lot. Mm-hmm. And the Edomites.
Esau.
Yeah.
So that helps us to kind of see where they settled. If we know where the Moabites were, we know where the descendants of Lot ended up, and we know where the descendants of Esau ended up. By knowing those two facts. Thank you. Anybody else? Nope. Okay. The next section is distances from Dan to Beersheba. Distance from the peaks of Mount Hermon to the Dead Sea.
Okay, which answer were they looking for? who had an answer? Did somebody back there say an answer?
120 also.
But 80 miles
from the
Right. Yeah.
See, that's
from the peaks of Mount Hermon to the Dead Sea?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was on page
86. From Mount Hermon to the Dead Sea. I want a definitive answer.
I remember I found a definitive answer, which is what
I did it in feet.
Okay, so
yeah, because it's 9,232 above sea level, 9,232, and then at the banks of the Dead Sea, it's 1,292 below sea level.
So I just added those two.
From Hermon to the Dead Sea, that didn't work.
But it said that it was probably over 10,000 feet.
Does anybody have the exact page number for the
intent on page 6?
Mount Hermon is snow covered the year round, yet it is only 120 miles from there to the impressive peak of the mountain.
Yeah. Let's see.
Better land variety. Land variety. Third paragraph.
There you go, yes. Thank you. I knew I had seen an exact reference.
Now look at page 14. This is not also the answer. It takes 200 miles of wandering river to cover 80 miles of land from its principal source at the base of Mount Hermon to the mouth of the Dead Sea.
That's what says the base.
That's what it said last week. It says that.
Yeah.
Well, it may be covering from the peak of the mountain to the sea, which is different than the base to... Does that make sense? Maybe that's why there's a difference there.
All right.
Okay, the next one is the distance from Jerusalem to Jericho. Okay. And the length of the Jordan River bed.
200 miles.
Okay. The distance from the Jordan River to the edge of the Arabian Desert. Can't hear y'all back there.
20.
Okay. And from Joppa to Gaza.
40.
Okay. And from the Leontes River to the Valley of Jezreel. Okay.
We did 3.5.
I am sorry. Number four. Thank you. The width of Canaan in the north. Oh, we didn't do three. Sorry. Total length of the Great Rift Valley.
4,000.
Okay. And the width of the Canaan in the north?
30.
And the width of Canaan at the southern end of the Dead Sea?
55.
Okay. Sorry about that. Thank you for calling that one. Okay, and then moving on, unless anybody has any things to add, stories that fit in with what we know about these distances, people who traveled. These were the kind of things, if I had more time, I was going to pull out, was kind of people who traveled some of these distances and just didn't realize that they did this on foot and, you know, or on camel. Just to, does anybody have any of those references quickly that we can add? No? Okay. Moving on then, we have cities. The most northern city in Israel's usual control.
Dan.
The best natural harbors in the land.
Tyre and
Sidon. Okay, and Herod built an artificial harbor there. Okay. And a city in the Negev built around the wall, the wells that Abraham dug.
Beersheba.
Okay. And why did that take place? Does anybody know why the city was built around those wells and not somewhere else? There was no water. Okay. And the city guarding the path through the spur of Carmel. And a great trading center of the Philistines.
Gaza.
Okay. And next we have the four parallel zones. I'm sorry, before we move on, does anybody want to mention any stories or anything from this section? Different cities that we know, different events took place.
Is Dan where they place their worship? And
it
shouldn't have.
You
want to? Jeroboam in the northern kingdom set up two golden calves, one at Dan and one at Bethel, so that he wouldn't lose his constituents
down to the southern kingdom when they traveled down there. He was afraid that they would all go back into the same king and he would lose his kingdom. And so he set up golden calves and made his own day of worship and his own place of worship and his own object of worship. And tried to convince them and was pretty successful in convincing many of them that they didn't need to travel all that way down there. It would be more convenient to worship the day of the temple.
Are any of these cities in existence today?
Good question. You're not supposed to ask me questions. You're supposed to answer the question.
That was just a query in my mind.
Yes, I believe there are, but Ms. Yvonne will probably be the best teacher to answer those questions because you've been there.
I'd have to go back and look at mine.
But any that stand out that you know?
Well, Beersheba's still there. Ghetto's still there. Caesarea's still there. And Gaza, we didn't go to Gaza.
Okay.
And those people call that name Caesarea.
Do they? Caesarea. Huh. Interesting. Okay. Anything else anybody wants to add? Any other Bible stories that are fitting with these for you?
Abraham's well is still there.
Okay. Of course, Jerusalem was still there.
I'm trying to remember, and I'm... Like I said, I ran out of time. I literally was up to ridiculous hours studying this. And so I didn't get to do all that I wanted to. But wasn't there someone who traveled from Jerusalem to Gaza? In the New Testament? Was it to God, from Jerusalem to Gaza? I'm trying to remember.
He was on the... Our mother, he was... on his way back down to Egypt, but Gaza was mentioned in the story.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking of then. Okay. But I just didn't, this is why I need y'all's help this morning. I didn't have time to do as much as I wanted to. I can't blame my baby exactly, but he's been sick, so he's not really given me much time to study. So, anyway, let's see. The next section is to, unless anybody has any more, I don't want to shortchange anybody because...
If you're reading through like Genesis, chapter 26, there's like all of the different people that were born in the children of them, and most of them are what turned into the different groups of people that lived in the different areas.
Right, so that's
very
true.
Interesting.
Yes.
From that standpoint, unless I'm like four people, and I wouldn't recommend trying to crawl inside of a kitchen cupboard just because you stay, because you're not going to wake someone up twice. It's hurt to crawl out.
Chris was pointing out that it's interesting to read how the different children that were born, like to the different men, like specifically Jacob, ended up being the ones that settled in these different lands, and so the lands were named after those children, and so that's kind of fascinating too. So that's a good point. Yes.
Verse 26 of Acts 8 says, "But an angel of the Lord spoke to Philip, saying, get up and go south to the road that descends from Jerusalem to Gaza."
Okay, that's right. Okay, very good. I knew that was in there, and I just haven't had time to pull it out. Again, just to kind of look at that, when you look at where some of these things are, it kind of gives you a clue how far they're traveling. Now, we might have to look from Jerusalem to something else and then something else to Gaza to get an actual... But anyway, just to kind of see the distances they traveled. I mean, it takes us 30 minutes in the car to do the 25 miles from our house to here. You know, and that's in a car going 65 miles an hour. You know, you can only do... 3 to 4 miles an hour walking quickly on foot, unless you're really quick and you might be able to do 5, but you'd wear yourself out probably before you could continue that pace. So, you know, 4 is really fast and 5 is extremely fast. So, you know, you might be able to keep that pace for maybe 1 hour, but you'd start to get tired. So imagine doing 40 miles just 40. Some of these are even more. But just 40 miles on foot, how long that's going to take. You know, we take our ability to travel for granted. Okay, moving on to the identifying the regions on the map. Name the four parallel zones between the Mediterranean Sea and the Arabian Desert. I had to scratch mine out because I did it wrong first. Okay. The flat, fertile coastal plain.
Hill country.
Then there's, okay, the hill country.
Jordan Valley.
Jordan Valley.
Transjordan Fertile.
And the Jordan. Yeah. Say that again, please. Transjordan.
Transjordan
Plateau. Okay, I was having trouble getting that out of my mouth. Okay, very good. And the dry, rugged valley south of the Dead Sea. Everybody. The Hebrew name of the valley that means God sowing. Jezreel. The Greek name for the same valley. Israel. The central portion of the coastal plain.
Sharon.
The very dry, rugged area south of Canaan. And the hot, dry east wind.
Sirocco.
And the very rugged slopes on the west side of the Dead Sea. Judah. Yeah, that's what I had too. Yeah. The name for the Jordan Valley today. El Gore. And the low rolling hills between the coastal plain and the hill country of Judah.
Shephelah.
And three more, guys. We're almost done. The trade route along, and these I thought were kind of fun, just to kind of see where they did trading, you know, because that was their livelihood. So that's kind of an interesting little tidbit that I didn't really know. What was the trade route along the coastal plain? Okay. Right, it had two names. And then the trade route running along the peaks of the mountain ridge on the west side of the Jordan.
Sure.
Yep. And then the trade route along the Transjordan Plateau. Okay. Very good. Anybody have anything to add there?
I had a thought. It's not a biblical scripture. But when the children of Israel were leaving the wilderness and coming up on the east side of the Jordan, they were refused permission to go through Edom, and yet that king's highway goes through Edom. They would have been able to use this very nice, well-traveled area, and they were refused permission to do that. And find their own way.
Oh, that's kind of rough, isn't it? Especially knowing how rugged the terrain was. You had a thought?
This doesn't pertain to the lesson, but where was the Garden of Eden in all of this?
Anybody have a better answer than I will give? I know we can kind of pinpoint an approximate based on the rivers, but does anybody have a better answer than...
The only river we know is the Euphrates.
Right, because the other rivers have different names, so they're either non-existent anymore. They may have been buried from, you know, after the flood. Sometimes rivers get buried underground. So it's very hard to pinpoint an exact spot for that.
And the Euphrates is went into the Garden of Eden?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Genesis specifically mentions the river Euphrates, but I thought there was another river still in existence. There's Tigris, Euphrates, Gihon, and Kishon.
Yes.
And I couldn't find it. The map on page 22, you can find a sea.
Thank you.
It was in that Fertile Crescent area up there somewhere.
So we know it was somewhere in there. We just don't know. I mean, that's a pretty big area, but we can't know for sure because some of the rivers have been buried and so on, or I don't know, dried up.
And we can't know for sure because God ensured it.
Exactly. Exactly. We're not supposed to know. So, okay. Any other thoughts or anything else that, as we've been doing this, that kind of made you go, oh, I didn't know that, or or I knew that a long time ago, but oh wow, I've forgotten.
Makes you want to go back.
Makes you want to go back. I'm jealous that you ever got to go. That was always one of my life dreams, was to go over there. Never did. I shouldn't say jealous, because I am happy for you. It is just something that I would love to do someday.
I don't know if we'll get to it, but the Jericho Road is one thing that really stood out. I mean, you think about the Jericho Road, that was scary. I mean, the song got set on the bus. It was probably about a single lane, you know, like,
oh, wow.
On this great big huge bus, and it's just scary. Nothing there, no trees, nothing. Just a big old drop off in the road. It was like,
ooh.
I couldn't even look out the window sometimes. I mean, my car was together and walking and walking down. We used to sing a song on the Jericho Road.
Yeah.
I love that song. Not really into the words, but...
Well, ladies, thank you very much for helping me, because in Jean's absence, which will be a challenge.